when we call good evil and evil good, bad things happen. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you again, Barry, recording here in the studio. Of course, you're in your studio and I'm in my studio. Magic of Skype allows these triumphs for us.
That's right, and saves me a 2-hour and 40-minute drive to come to your studio.
One way, yeah.
One way, that's right.
One way. Yeah,
absolutely.
We used to do that. Remember, we used to do it. Of course, you were up here more often. So you were in Columbus. I lived in Westerville. It was easy.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
It's a 20-minute drive from Westerville to downtown during the off time. So it was real easy. Now I live in Newark. It's not that much further. It's about double the miles. It's just I live rurally. And
now you know how I feel.
Yeah, that's right. you and I actually live about the same distance from town. I live about 6 or 7 miles from the north end of Newark, and you live, what, 6 miles?
About six. I live a little over 6 miles outside of Gallipolis.
Gallipolis. Right. Well, the thriving metropolis. Both of us have the thriving metropolises, Newark and Gallipolis. So, and we say that with tongue firmly planted in cheek.
Well, actually, I sometimes don't say it that firmly planted in my cheek, because I was talking to my father yesterday. For this little burg, we have more traffic than you would expect.
Oh, gosh. Go to North 21st Street around noon. It rivals Broad and High, trying to get through there. Trucks in and out, cars, people driving 14 miles an hour with nobody in front of them, all that stuff. And couple that with not necessarily great road design and a commercial corridor that it may be overbuilt, and voila, you've got gridlock, even in Newark.
There it is.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Gridlock. I'm glad you said that word, because that seems to be on the minds of a lot of people right now, especially at the federal level. If you pay attention or you believe the mainstream media reporting, Washington, D.C. is in chaos right now, Chuck. You realize that? Nothing can get done. Every day we inch closer to the impeachment of Donald Trump, because obviously he completely doesn't know what he's doing. He's completely inept. And there's nothing that the White House can do that's right. At least that's what you read if you go to CNN or MSNBC or any others. Now, Chuck, who are the arbiters of what is the right or wrong thing coming out of the White House right now?
Well, that's a great question. Essentially, there are disinformation campaigns coming out of the mainstream media. There's just no doubt about that. Ladies and gentlemen, that meme about fake news has really simply blown up in the face of the mainstream media, since they're the ones who are perpetrating huge amounts of error. I'm trying to find an article that I read the other day that had a list of 40 false stories that have come out in the first month of the Trump presidency. Now, were there 40 false stories that came out from the mainstream media during the first month of the Obama administration? Well, there may have been, but nobody was checking. And what they were all about was, you know, Obama's walking on water, and he eats nails, and he makes gold bricks out of it, and all this stuff that was just the sycophancy. If you don't know what that word is, you can look it up. Sycophant, sycophant. A sycophant is somebody who is the ultimate yes man, if you will. So what are we seeing? Well, we're seeing all this stuff about Russia. If you ask the average guy on the street at this point, Russia got, at least the story is that Russia got Donald Trump elected. Now, when you ask about details, about how that happened, oh, well, they hacked voting machines. Well, no one in the mainstream media has said that. Everybody's saying, well, no, that didn't happen. How did they do it? Well, they hacked into Hillary's email. WikiLeaks was all about Russia. Well, it's turning out that one of the WikiLeaks sources, at least, was not from Russia, although it was from someone who solicited Russian donations. It was Senator John McCain, who later basically had to apologize because he passed along an unvetted story who said he was just doing his duty by passing it on to the FBI, right, when in fact what he was doing was attempting to undermine someone he hates passionately. And there are reasons why he hates him.
You know, Trump did beat him out of the electoral votes in Ohio.
Yeah, he got zero to Trump's, what do we get here, 17?
18.
18, that's right, 18 here. I can remember the days when we were 21.
Yeah, I can too, and those days are long past.
Long past.
Many people have moved out of this state because of bad policies.
Yeah, wow, you think?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
It's going to be flat out on it. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Why, honestly, in the business climate that we have here, why stay here when you can move to Florida and get beat up?
Right. Well, and look at it this way too, Chuck. I mean, there's this is not our key focus today,
no,
but just want to throw this out here because there are a lot of factors in play. But one of the key factors is, if you look, you know, you and I talked about having 21 members of you know, or electoral votes. That wasn't more than about 2 or 3 decades ago.
No, it wasn't long ago at all.
And what have we had for the last 4.5 decades, Chuck? We've had abortion on demand in this country.
Yeah.
And what happens when you are killing 60-plus million Americans before they have a chance to grow and be producers? Number one, it plays havoc with your economy. But number two, your population ages. And when your population ages, and especially if your population is aging and they actually have some resources, what do they usually do about the time they retire?
Well, they move someplace warm.
They move someplace warm. That's right. They move to Florida or the Carolinas or Georgia or someplace like that where it's warmer year-round and there's less, you know, although I don't know. I think I'd keep snowstorms in exchange for hurricanes and tornadoes. But, you know, that's entirely their call to make. But that's the reason why Ohio has been losing electoral clout, is because our population is aging and they are moving away. And it's partially because of our economic climate, but our economic climate is such because we have to continually raise taxes in order to generate the revenues that we would have raised from income taxes. But when you kill off 21,000 plus Ohioans every year for the last 45 years, and the numbers have been higher, that's the lowest it's been in 45 years, is 21,000 aborted babies. Well, you know, that adds up, Chuck. That's over 45 years. That's close to 1 million people. Just think about that, folks, just in Ohio alone. That's about a tenth of our population. So 10%, that would be like turning around and, you know, looking at a crowd of 10 people and taking one of them out of the equation completely and then wondering why, in the aggregate, we have problems and we have an economic issue and we can't find workers and we have a drug problem, and we have people leaving the state, and we have high taxes, and these things all compound on themselves, Chuck.
Here, think about this. This is the reason why we've had an open borders policy. And everybody says, well, I don't understand the connection between abortion and an open borders, look the other way, let everybody come in, that can possibly come in, kind of strategy on immigration policy. It's very simple, folks. We have a Ponzi scheme in our retirement system. It's called Social Security. Now, in order for Social Security to continue to work, and it being a Ponzi scheme, and for benefits to keep increasing, you have to keep increasing the employment base. The only way to increase the employment base is to grow the population. Now, our population has grown significantly in the last 40 years. I think we went from around, 270 million people to now around 320. So 50 million people in 40 years, or more or less.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of those? Okay, how many abortions have there been since 1973?
Estimates are over 60 million nationally.
So we killed off actually more people then the population grew by. Where did those people come from? They came from an open border policy. That had to have, because we killed off the people, the babies, that would have held those spots. Therefore, somebody had to come in. So what happens when you bring in people I don't want to sound xenophobic because, let's face it, this is the way, you know, all nations have immigration. And all people that come in from outside bring things with them. They bring cultural things with them. What happens when, if you do rough numbers, 60 million people between 50 and 60 million people have come into the country to take up those slots of the people we killed off. You're getting into the 20% range of the current population of the United States of America. What does that do to the culture that you have developed in your country? What does it necessarily do?
It alters it significantly.
It alters it significantly. So what's really happening with abortion? We're trying to keep our Ponzi schemes and our essentially our retirement programs and now our socialized medicine programs alive by keeping people coming in. And by the way, it really didn't work in the case of Obamacare, because what was supposed to happen was all the 20-somethings were supposed to come in and buy a policy, and that was going to keep all us older folks who tend to be get really serious illnesses, you know, kidney failure and cancer and all this other stuff. It was supposed to keep us going because we were going to be picking their pockets. In the same way that right now, retirees, don't get me wrong, folks. I'm going to be 60 in a couple of days. By the time you hear this, I'll be 60 years old. So I understand. And my retirement fund, I laugh about it every time I open the envelope from my 401k. But that being said, right now, essentially, because the money was spent, you know, remember Al Gore put it in the lockbox and all that stuff, the Social Security Fund? The Social Security Fund hasn't been in a lockbox or invested in decades. It's been spent. It goes into the general fund and gets spent. So what's happening is people that are retired are living on the back of the people who aren't retired. And whose back are they riding on the most? Well, they're riding on the young, who basically don't have a lot to look forward to in terms of retirement, unless the population continues to grow. And let's face it, with 320 or 330 million people in this country, how much more can it grow? And we've got a lot of empty space, but the cities are becoming uncomfortable. And all you got to do is drive into Columbus. I can remember, I moved back here from Michigan in 1996. A lot of the places I used to drive past that are cornfields and soybean fields now have buildings on them. New Albany, for instance. So what's happening is, stupidly, we're plowing under good farmland and putting warehouses on them. And warehouses for goods that are being made someplace else. Other than the United States of America, is that a sustainable economy? Well, the answer is no. You can't have people coming in here. I mean, we're rapidly becoming a service economy. My kids are finding out it's very difficult to find a job with a living wage. When I was in high school, you could still take your high school diploma, get out, and get a pretty decent job working someplace, especially if you had taken welding classes or pipe fitters, that kind of thing, or you were getting apprenticeship on that. Well, those things aren't quite as in demand, although all the trades right now are in demand because there's a lot of building. Sometimes I wish I had a trade. So I'm really kind of gone off where we were going from, but the fact is that it's interesting how immigration policy and abortion policy are closely intertwined, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very much so, and you know, and as I mentioned earlier, we sometimes we have a mess around our country because we call good evil and evil good, and you know, our culture calls abortion good. I mean, you saw the Women's March, you see all of these things. Terry McAuliffe, who's the governor of Virginia, just vetoed a bill that would defund Planned Parenthood in his state. You know, we have a similar measure that is being held up by court in Ohio. And because Planned Parenthood does so much good, except for the fact that when you start asking them specifics on what they do good, they can't seem to point to anything except killing babies.
Well, so they make the claim. If you look around, you'll see a meme on, like, for instance, Facebook. Last time I went to Planned Parenthood, I got, you know, pap smear, breast exam. There's a whole big list of all this women's health issues. Well, the fact is, no, you didn't get that there. They sent you out for that. Or if they had they had that available in their clinic, it was farmed out. They didn't do it because what they do is abortion.
That's it. That's right. And that's been reinforced time after time. You know, you've had groups like Live Action and others who've gone in undercover, who've taken videos, the Center for Medical Progress. Every last one of them basically are along the same themes, which is Planned Parenthood lies to the public about what they really do.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and get millions and millions of dollars from governments, both at the federal and at the state levels, in order to continue the facade and continue killing babies. But that has a cost, and we're talking about some of those costs. Now, you know, that kind of really gets back. Like I said, that wasn't our main thing we were talking about today, Chuck. But I really wanted to just, every once in a while, we just need to be starkly slapped in the face about the reality of what we're doing around here. You know, a lot of people can go on blithely. We can talk about the economy. We can talk about Trump. We can talk about policies. We can talk about all of those things. But until we get down to the root, which, and of course, the base root is the rejection of God and the rejection of God's law in our culture, our society, and yes, sadly enough, even in many of our churches. Until we get that straightened out, all the rest of this stuff isn't going to straighten itself out. We may have momentary detente or ceasefires in the culture war. At least we'll see them as that, but they really aren't. But we may have little minor advances that everybody makes a whole lot about, and we're going to talk about a little bit about that here in a minute. But ultimately, until we get down to the fact of changing hearts, and praying for God's power to move to convert hearts to being in subjection to His will, we're just going to keep making the same mistakes or creating the same messes that led us to where we are right now. You and I have talked about this before. It really doesn't matter that much when you change the Oval Office. You still have things that go on that aren't getting at the heart of the matter. Now, I will say one thing. It does look like the current occupant is trying to do a few things that are somewhat, I would say, maybe unprecedented and probably wouldn't have happened had it been an establishment figure like a Mitt Romney, like a John McCain. It probably would have been business as usual Republican flavor versus business as usual Democrat flavor.
Well, yeah.
In the national debate. But now it's basically is business has changed dramatically. And it's interesting to see, and you're right. And of course, now we're going to get back around to talk about what we're talking about. The media is having a meltdown.
Oh, yeah,
and
they are.
There are reasons why the media is having a meltdown. And the media, it isn't just the media, Chuck. It's the media. It's leftist politicians. It's liberal businesses. And it is the grassroots, quote-unquote, organizers and activists of the liberal stripe, including the gay rights movement and Planned Parenthood and others, who are basically losing their complete composure. And I have to say it, they are fulfilling my first maxim of politics. And, Chuck, you've heard it enough. What is my first maxim of politics?
Oh, well, the left always outruns its cover.
Exactly. The left will always push too far, too fast, and outrun their cover and expose to the general population what they're really all about and what they're really after, and they invite a pushback. And frankly, folks, start pushing, because here it is. We've got a number of things out there. If you had any doubts whatsoever in your mind what some of the agenda of the left really was, you're going to see it during the first 100 days of the Trump administration. They can't help themselves. As a matter of fact, Chuck, it was kind of funny because, you know, I think you sent me this article. And if you need me to pop it over to you, I will. But it was out of the American Thinker online site. It was an article by James Lewis, and it basically was titled, "Liberals Are Now Getting a Taste of How the Obama Years Felt for Conservatives."
Oh, gosh, yes. And I think,
I mean, and this is hilarious. You know, and Lewis, you know, he gets into the heart of this matter, and it's a long article. We're not going to go through and read it all. But, you know, he really gets down to this whole thing. And he says, we're seeing a kind of poetic justice in the shape of simple payback. And I think he may be oversimplifying the matter, Chuck. I'm not sure that this is really payback. I you know, because payback has a certain flavor to it.
Right.
You know, if somebody does something and you get them back, it has a certain flavor to it. There's a vindictiveness. There is a, I'm just doing this to make the point on this particular issue type of, you know, vibe to it. I'm not feeling that vibe out of the out of what Trump's been doing so far. This actually starts to feel like, for, and I'll just state it from my background in politics, this is really starting to feel like these are principled ideas and positions that he truly believes are best for the country. And that seems to be, there doesn't seem to be the, okay, how can I benefit the party and how can we get an advantage over the Dems? I mean, the only group, special interest, that he seems to be wanting and successfully getting an advantage over is the mainstream media, who don't know what to make of this guy. But I don't really see that. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily simple payback. I do believe maybe at the grassroots level, there are many people who might feel that it's, you know, now's the time for payback for all of the bad things the Obama administration. And let's not kid ourselves. There were an awful lot of bad calls made by the Obama administration. But also, let's not kid ourselves, there were also really bad calls made by the Bush administration and by the Reagan administration and by the Clinton administration. And I can go back and back and back. Administrations are going to make bad calls. They're going to do things that, because they're normally connected intrinsically with their party identity, they're going to do things to try to advance benefit or give advantage to their party structure in policy that actually isn't good for the American people. We've seen a lot of that, Chuck.
Oh, boy, have we.
We see it at the federal level. You see it at the state level. Heck, you can even see it at the local level if you know how to look for it. But really what it gets right down to is that doesn't seem to be the case this time around. I mean, if you're going to be goring somebody's ox, as they say, Donald Trump is picking up a sword and he's stabbing every ox that comes near him, whether it's a Republican ox or a Democrat ox. He's not specifically singling out anything that just is the Democrats, but what he is singling out are bad decisions that were made by the previous administration that he can roll back. And that was one of his campaign promises, that he was going to roll back a lot of the Obama-era directives and executive orders and presidential decision directives and agency regulations that he knew were, as he believes, hurting the country. And he's already, you know, they just rolled out the first, you know, 30 days in office this week. There were pressers held. Most of the mainstream news media carried it because they were trying to figure out an angle they could use to attack him on. And, of course, if you go look at the mainstream media today, there are plenty of things out there. I mean, I think you said you saw one article that talked about how, what was it, that they thought Trump may have some brain damage or something?
Oh, well, the New Republic magazine. I'll put up a link to this. The New Republic magazine, this is reported in the Daily Caller, is talking about an article that has been run in the New Republic, which is a reliably liberal magazine. If you're looking for a liberal response to something, you will find it in the New Republic. It's been that way for, the New Republic has been around for 100 years or so. I mean, it's an old line liberal magazine. But they
started in the progressive era, I believe.
Yes, it's a progressive magazine. And basically they've gone so far as to claim run an article from an MD who's claiming that Trump is showing signs of having tertiary syphilis.
That was it. Yes. It's brain damage caused by syphilis.
Yeah, tertiary syphilis is the stage when it gets in your brain and starts Al Capone is probably the most famous person that I can think of right off the top of my head who was known to have tertiary syphilis. and it causes violent outbursts and all kinds of stuff. And they're claiming that his quote-unquote instability is due to tertiary syphilis. Well, it's absolutely silly, but not shocking that this is part of the ongoing drumbeat. Remember last week, I think we talked about the drumbeat. Get Trump, get Trump, get Trump. Undermine him. Every place you go, you're going to see it. You know, the constant protesting, the now showing up at town hall meetings in force. Now, you and I talked offline. That's not a bad strategy, because if you recall, that's what the Tea Party did. And in fact, what the Tea Party did for the most part, not just to liberals, not just the Democrats, but they did it to Republicans who were towing the Democratic mark, who basically had gotten into power and were governing like Democrats. What happened? Well, they got shown up at Tea Party meetings, and some of them got primaried, and some of them lost those primaries.
A number of them lost. As a matter of fact, I know at the state level, I can count at least four or five members of the General Assembly who were in there who were not supposed to be there if the party had had their way.
Yes. And see, that was the groundswell that the Republicans didn't anticipate that actually got Donald Trump elected. Now, when you get to the bottom line, you know, all we hear is all these strange things that Donald Trump has done. Well, okay, is it any more strange than John Kasich going to Europe to campaign for the Senate?
Well, no, I mean, really, and we'll get into that in a minute, but I'm starting to get, yeah, people have been asking me, what is John Kasich doing? And I've been telling them, and when they start thinking about it, they're like, yeah, that sounds about right. So,
yeah, he's campaigning for the Senate. Yeah, that's the way it gets done, you know.
Yeah. But anyhow, and I, you know, just I want to just quickly jump back here real quick and to Lewis's article, because he does say one thing in here that I think he hits, but he doesn't really carry it through. And that's okay, because his whole point was on going after the mob hysteria of the left and how they operate, and that's fine. And you will have this up online at principlepolicy.com as a link with our program, so you can listen to this or you can read it. But he says here this thing in the paragraph down in the middle, he says, Donald Trump is smart enough, and he's talking about smart enough of, you know, dealing with liberals, but he's not an ideologue. Not many successful business people are. Donald J. Trump is a patriot, however, which is a much more profound and natural state of mind. Chuck, I think he hits that right on the head. I think that's the thing that the political class, the mainstream media class, and the liberal elite class have not been able to identify and or figure out a response to. And that's because he's dealing from a whole set of presuppositions and a whole set of principles and beliefs that are mainly alien to them. Now, whether or not Donald Trump is a Christian and is living by Christian values or not, that debate will continue to go on. You and I both know that. There will still be yay-sayers and naysayers on both sides of that equation. But if you really look at what he's doing, Donald Trump's real faith is he's an Americanist. He is I believe in the American dream, and I believe in the idea of releasing people to reach their full potential. Now, sometimes he's going to have to do that by saying you're fired to people in the administration and in the bureaucracies, and that's okay too, I suppose. But really what he's trying to do, at least in the first 30 days, is, you know, he's putting directives out there that, yeah, we're going to knock down the barriers to getting pipelines done, to getting businesses coming back into the country. Oh, and by the way, while you're at it, you're going to have to use American-made products if you're going to do these projects. Yeah, Chuck, we haven't seen that for a long time.
30 years, maybe.
Oh, maybe at least that. I mean, I think Reagan was the last president who basically made a requirement that U.S.-made products be involved in government projects. So I really see that this is part of the Trump phenomenon, folks. This is part of why people just can't figure it out, and they're just completely in meltdown over this, because they've been used to it being business as usual, with just changing the rider on the horse, but it's still the same horse of the same color going the same direction, and it's just a question of who's sitting up there in the saddle with the riding crop, goading the horse to continue to go toward the edge of the cliff. And that's really, Trump's kind of, you know, he didn't hop on the horse. He grabbed it by the bridle, and he's turning its head, and it's going a different direction, and they're all sitting there like, wait, you can't do that. Wait a minute. But that's not the way we do things. And I don't think he cares. I really don't think he cares. You know, you hear some of the liberals screaming about, oh, he's done it now. We can impeach him. I think he would look forward to if they tried to bring articles of impeachment. I think it would be grand theater for him.
Yeah.
Can you imagine an impeachment hearing bringing articles of impeachment in the House and or a trial in the Senate, where this president would go before the Congress and the American people to make his case? He's already proved he's going to do it. He's called press conferences for the media just to come in and tell them how bad of a job they're doing.
Yes, exactly.
This is unprecedented, Chuck. When is the last time we had a president who wasn't under indictment already, who was combative with the media, who didn't accede to their, well, you've got to do it our way, and you have to give us what we want, or we'll give you a bad day in the press. He doesn't care.
Even Nixon, who hated the press, basically kissed up.
Feared them.
Kissed up.
Nixon,
yep,
feared the press. And that's evident from the Watergate tapes. I mean, he feared the press. Trump doesn't fear the press. I mean, it's refreshing in some ways, because then you get something like this. And folks, this is honestly, if you, I don't care how you feel about Donald Trump being president, or you know, if you're a Republican, that he's not your, you know, that's not your party. I don't care. If nothing else, it was worth all of everything that we've gone through and everything that's happened to have this particular soundbite hit. And Chuck, this is out of a weird news site, but it's legitimate because it's now being reiterated on other news sites, and this individual's doubling down on stupid. From Grabian News, Grabian.com, and yes, we'll link this up too, that you had one major talking head in the mainstream media basically come out and, I guess, in a stream of consciousness kind of moment, admit what we really all knew was happening with the mainstream media. And this happened on Wednesday morning, and there was a discussion about Trump, you know, and this whole thing where he called the media together to basically talk to the American people because he knew the media would give him the platform to do it. So he scheduled a press conference that they all had to cover, and then he went through and just went over their heads to talk to the public about what he'd done in the first month. And it's hilarious. But that didn't set too well with a lot of people in the mainstream media, especially MSNBC's talking heads, Joe Scarborough and Micah Brzezinski. Okay? And so in an exchange on Wednesday morning, here's what was said. Scarborough basically said, going da-da-da-da-da, and they had talked about this whole thing. He says, what Yamiche said is what I hear from all the Trump supporters. This is Scarborough. That I talk to who were Trump voters and are still Trump supporters, they go, yeah, you guys are going crazy. He's doing, what are you so surprised about? He's doing exactly what he said he's going to do, much like what I've just said here a minute ago. Quote. Then his co-host, Michael Brzezinski, says this, and Chuck, this is the money cord, okay? This is the thing that should be posted up on memes and on water coolers and on boards everywhere. If you are if you're involved in politics in any way, shape, or form, you need to keep this in mind. Michael Brzezinski says this, quote, well, I think that the dangerous, you know, edges here are that he is trying to undermine the media and trying to make up his own facts. See, there's those, you know, fake news, false facts things, alternative facts that they're trying to push. But that's not the piece. Here it is. And it could be that while unemployment and the economy worsens, he could have undermined the messaging so much that he can actually control exactly what people think. And that is our job, unquote. Michael Brzezinski just said it's the media's job to control what people think. Now, if that doesn't send chills down people's spines, nothing else will. The mainstream media, with their billions and billions of dollars, with their unprecedented access 24/7 to shaping the opinions of the nation, have just admitted that their job is to actually control exactly what people think.
Well, that's nothing new. I'll be quite honest, they were admitting it in 1992. You and I talked about this offline as well. I asked you, you know, we all remember who basically threw the election to Bill Clinton in 1992. Well, who was it? It was Ross Perot.
Right.
Ross Perot running as an independent, and who basically admitted at the end, he says, well, I won because I revitalized the Democratic Party. And in fact, he had revitalized the Democratic Party. Bill Clinton wasn't all that popular. Who was wildly unpopular was George H.W. Bush. And who was he wildly unpopular with? He was wildly unpopular with his base, the Republican conservatives. Yeah. So that being said, Ross Perot, essentially, Admiral William Stockdale, if you recall, was his running mate. And Admiral Stockdale had come out and said, you know, at the time, Ross Perot was a billionaire and he could buy his own advertising and his own coverage. So what Stockdale had said was that he can now, quote unquote, bypass the filters.
Yes.
And that meme was picked up by the media, who said, yes, he's bypassing the filters. They were, in fact, admitting that their job was to control what people thought. And they were worried because Perot was bypassing those filters who thought their job was to control what people thought. That's not their job. Their job, of course, is to report the facts, the truth, without spin.
But they want to make the facts, Chuck. They want to tell you exactly what to think. And you know what? That's interesting because there are many people who that's all they do every day, all day long, is they feed themselves on what these talking heads say. You know, they refuse to go and try to examine it for themselves. And that's scary because, you know, I've talked about this before, both off air and on air, but, you know, the reason why programs like the AMC's The Walking Dead show is so popular is because it isn't too far of a stretch to say that we basically, other than, you know, actually consuming other people's flesh, we have a large nation of zombies out there.
People have definitely
lost. They're
zombies,
and they just believe anything they're told by the media. There are zombies in that there, you know, especially in our area, have, you know, basically given over to illicit drugs. There are zombies in that they can't see any way or don't want to see any way of being independent of government because they want government to provide for all their needs, whether it's, you know, Social Security or welfare or Medicaid, you know, or, you have to cover my health care. Folks, that's being a zombie, you know, and I'm sorry if that smacks people between the eyes, but you're being a zombie. You know, you are basically just guided by one impulse alone, and that impulse is that government needs to do it all for you, or that the media talking heads are the only ones who know what's really going on, and so when they say it, it must be true. And we see that, Chuck. I mean, hey, come on, let's see. The Women's March, all these, you know, paid planned protests. Folks, you're looking at zombie encampments. That's exactly what those are. You know, they sound like they're being originalistic and intellectual and you know, free thinking. And now I think that's the biggest laugh, you know, when anybody says that they're free thinkers, but yet they refuse to believe that there is a God and that he is sovereignly in control. Their thinking is not free. It's enslaved. It's enslaved to Satan. But, you know, that's neither here nor there when it comes to what we're talking about at this point, but or is it? I think it's always here or there when it comes to talking about any point. But you have a situation where this change of way of doing business in America is shaken, has shaken the quote-unquote pillars of society, the media, etc., so to the core that they're now publicly, finally exposing what they're really all about. And I think it's time, Chuck. I mean, it's great. This is refreshing, you know, for them to come through and in their self-importance and their pretentiousness to honestly just come down to the saying and say, well, we don't like it because we don't get to manipulate him. He's manipulating us.
Yes, they don't like that. Being hoisted by their own petard is not something that they care. They like, which is part of what that article that you brought up first, the one by Mr. James, or I'm sorry, James Lewis. Mm-hmm. Liberals now getting a taste of how the Obama years felt for conservatives. Not just the Obama years. I'll be quite honest. I felt that way during a lot of Bush's years, Clinton's years, the previous Bush's years, the Carter years, the Ford years. Run the gamut. I felt much better during the Reagan administration, but the fact is that he hired an awful lot of GOPE guys. And the reason he hired GOPE guys and the reason that George H.W. Bush ended up being his vice president was because the Republican Party foisted these people on him and said, you can't be president unless you take them on. We will do what the Republican Party tried to do to Trump. And that is destroy him. Because from inside, let's not kid ourselves, the Republican Party tried to destroy Trump. What do you think guys like McCain, Kasich, Lindsey Graham, all these insiders, who's the Ben Sasse, name these people that were insiders that worked diligently to try to make sure that Trump didn't get elected, or they basically, it's damnation by faint praise. Did that tactic, basically made it look like they were helping him out, while they were essentially undermining him, by, well, yeah, he's okay. I guess I could take him as president, that kind of thing. And the fact is, in the state of Ohio, what happened? The state chairman of the Republican Party had to be fired, and the Republican campaign for Trump had to be replaced with Trump's private entities because the Ohio Republican Party was actively undermining him here. And in fact, spent almost no money, and were in fact told to get away from the campaign apparatus and stay away from it.
Okay, well, Chuck, and it keeps going on because that beat still goes on. Well, we know that Trump got involved personally in that, and now Jane Timken is the Republican Party chairman in Ohio because Trump made personal phone calls to get rid of Matt Borges. But, you know, his next goal, I think, might be to get rid of John Kasich. Where's Kasich this week? Well, folks, he spent his week in Munich, Germany, as a guest of one Senator John McCain, who invited Kasich to be part of the U.S. delegation to the International Security Conference that was being held in Europe, in Munich. And basically what happened over the weekend, well, John Kasich showed why the American people didn't support John Kasich. Here he is again, Chuck, and this is after the inauguration. You know, he didn't go to the convention. He wouldn't back Trump. He voted for McCain for president. But then he went to the inauguration so he could get some airtime to pre-launch his senatorial run. And now he's going to this thing with his best buddy, John McCain. And he goes out there and he basically gets in front of the media, you know, his buddies. And on CNN's State of the Union, you notice he was on CNN, that seems to be one of his favorite places, that he goes and he starts bashing Trump about his commitment to to NATO, and to Europe. And so basically, the problem was with that, This was on Sunday, and of course they tape those. Sometimes they tape us, sometimes they're live. But just the day before on Saturday, the Vice President, Mike Pence, who, by the way, folks, this week was also in St. Louis, Missouri, helping to clean up a Jewish cemetery in University City in St. Louis that had been attacked by vandals. You know, he went personally down there to re-show the commitment of the administration to the people of this country, as opposed to the attacks he's getting from the media that Trump's an anti-Semitic. And it's like, okay, let's stop kidding ourselves here. If Trump was very anti-Semitic, why would his son-in-law, who happens to be Jewish,
yes,
be one of his closest advisors? And why would he have spent political capital to get him into the White House to be an advisor? See, that's the whole point with the left's their facts. They don't add up. But so here's Kasich again rolling up. So Pence makes this great speech on Saturday, basically reassuring the European leaders that the Trump administration is going to be all in. It says that the United States of America strongly supports NATO and will be unwavering in our commitments to this transatlantic alliance, unquote, from the Vice President of the United States. And he says, this is President Trump's promise. We will stand with Europe today and every day because we are bound together by the same noble ideals, freedom, democracy, justice, and the rule of law, unquote. Okay, so that was Saturday, last Saturday. On Sunday, in front of the state CNN, here's John Kasich, who was invited to go on this trip, and I'm sure Pence probably swallowed hard and said, yeah, let him come. basically, echo, and of course, the Democrats are making this noise, and so John Kasich's becoming a microphone for the Democrats, basically saying, well, it's just critically important that all the signals coming out of the administration are very solid and consistent with the fact that we stand together. And he says this, quote, the president's people have all said it, but frankly, he needs to be heard in a more clear and a more passionate way, unquote. I'm sorry, Chuck, what wasn't clear or wasn't passionate about the comments from the vice president about the administration's support for Europe and NATO? What is John Kasich actually saying?
Well, he's basically telling NATO, don't worry, I'll do anything you want.
Well, he's basically, John Kasich's also saying you can't trust Donald Trump.
Well, yes.
You can't trust Donald Trump. And gosh, wouldn't it have been better if I would have been president? Because I would have I would have been completely on your side.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have given you anything you wanted. And you know, Kasich's over there trying to, you know, I'm sorry, you're making a fool of himself.
Well, he's learning.
Not very hard for him, I understand.
But he's learning from the best. He is basically going to do, he thinks he's going to do what McCain tried. If you recall all that straight talk express stuff, and he was a maverick, and, you know, basically.
And he's going to have a book coming out in April called Two Americas, you know, and he's trying to get himself edged in there to be the. He'll be the sensible alternative to the Trump madness, as he would like to say it. So,
well, what he's hoping for is a major foreign policy meltdown between now and when he will be running for Senate, which will be in 2018?
Next year, yeah.
Yeah, well, he'll have to start campaigning next year. Or actually, he's campaigning now.
Campaigning now, he's just not publicly saying.
Okay, what's it called though when you go to a foreign country and you denigrate the President of the United States in his foreign policy, which by the way hasn't really taken effect yet. One thing I'm happy with is the fact that Tillerson went into the State Department and immediately almost fired all the hyper-partisan long-term. State Department employees. The media is calling it a bloodbath. He's like, I don't want to hear that kind of language. These people needed to go. Okay, good.
Yep. Well, you know, it's very interesting because it's not the Hatch Act, but I think what you're talking about is the Logan Act.
Yeah.
And the Logan Act basically says that a civilian, and okay, John Kasich, when it comes to the federal government, you are a civilian. Basically, it's a crime for a individual, a citizen of the United States, to confer with foreign governments against the interests of the United States. In other words, you can't negotiate with other nations on behalf of the U.S. without authorization. Now, the question then remains is, because he was part of the delegation, does that give him that clout? When he's on CNN, is he really doing that? Probably not. But the key is, would he want to be? Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
let's not get ourselves, okay? But this was the same thing that brought down Michael Flynn as the National Security Advisor, that supposedly sometime around the campaign or between the campaign and his being sworn in as the National Security Advisor, he negotiated with Russian diplomats about the position the U.S. was going to take on places like the Ukraine, the Crimea, and others. And so the left screamed about the violation of the Logan Act. Well, maybe they should be screaming about John Kasich and the potential violation of the Logan Act for him going over there and basically undermining the U.S. position with this appearance on CNN.
Well,
so,
look,
there's a lot of things that could be said about that. But
part of the deal here is that Trump has made it clear. He's like, you guys need to pull your own weight. The United States of America is not going to sit here and be your army. The European Union, or what's going to be left of the European Union, which I predict the European Union won't, there will be a facade of it, but it's not going to last for the entirety of the Trump presidency. I think a couple more places are going to have to pull out. Now, who you're not going to see pull out? You're not going to see Greece pull out. You're not going to see Spain pull out. Why? Because they're absolutely dependent upon Germany for continued subsidy payments.
Yep, they are.
Which is exactly why Scotland is mad about pulling out of the EU, because Britain basically, Britain's not making the welfare payments, and Scotland was getting all kinds of subsidies out of the EU, which they're not going to get anymore because Britain's pulling out of the European Union. It's very interesting. Once people get, this is one of the lessons that has to be learned about taking subsidies. Everybody's happy until the subsidies dry up. And then everybody says, well, no more gravy train. What are we going to do? Well,
what are we going to do?
Get to work. Make Scotland a place where people want to come to do business. How far mighty Scotland has fallen from the home of John Knox and the Presbyterian Church to the vassal state with no independent thought, who really wants to stay with Europeans who can tell them what to do because they send them money. It's a sad state, but we're seeing the same thing here in a different sense. But the fact is that one of the reasons that conservatives are so angry, because we're tired of everybody's vote being bought on our back, on our economic back, because that's exactly what's happening. And that's what John Kasich did with Medicaid expansion. He attempted to buy votes by giving away free stuff. Now, does that mean I have no compassion for people who have medical problems, who need help paying their bills? No, I do have compassion for that. I think there's a different way to handle that, a way that worked before the government came in, stepped in, and took it over. And that was the fact that most hospitals were run by churches, and those churches basically ran the hospitals as true nonprofits, not modern nonprofits, which make gigantic profits. They ran them as true nonprofits, at places where people could come and get treatment at prices that were reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if you were you didn't get turned away from a church hospital because you couldn't pay. Now, did they expect you to attempt to pay? Yes, they did. They did expect that. But the fact is, they didn't harass you and hound you and destroy your credit, because they changed the pricing structure in the middle of the treatment, something I went through about a couple years ago. Not me personally, my wife. That being said, and it was because it was at a formerly religious-run hospital that's now run by a for-profit corporation. You can't grow the welfare state without spreading the money around. And whose money do you spread around? Well, the people that remain working in the welfare state. And yes, that's the problem.
And that's the only place you get the money from.
And that's what's going on in the EU. That's why Greece, Spain, Italy will not pull out, because Germany's basically paying the bills. Well, how much longer is Germany going to remain paying the bills? Well, I think Angela Merkel's about to get thrown out the door. With Angela Merkel out the door, I think a lot of bets are off. That's why I think the EU may collapse under its own weight within four or five years. That's my analysis, folks. You can go back and play these and call me an idiot in 4 or 5 years if you want to. That's okay. I've been called one before. Well, okay, I got over it.
We can call you an idiot, or we can use the term that California Congresswoman Maxine Waters used to describe the Trump administration and many of their cabinet picks. And she used the phrase, a bunch of scumbags.
Yes.
Now, this is a sitting congresswoman, Chuck. Now, there's a video here, and I don't know how much time we've got left.
We only got about a minute.
Okay, so we don't have time to play it, but we'll put the link over here. This is from Gateway Pundit. There was an interview on MSNBC. That's the home of Micah Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough as well. So it makes a whole lot of sense that they'd bring Maxine Waters on for her to do her, you know, falling apart here. That basically she starts screaming, they're all a bunch of scumbags, and I think the American people need to know what's going on. They're all organized around making money. Well, gee, Chuck, isn't it kind of refreshing that he's bringing in business people who know how to run companies and know how to make a profit and will turn America around to doing the same thing?
Yes.
I guess for the permanent welfare class panderers like Maxine Waters, who basically gets reelected in her district because she continues to pump the government subsidies into her district, while she's sitting there with $14 million in assets, including $1 million home in California, Chuck, and I looked that up. I think it's just absolutely hilarious that they're giving these people airtime.
Yeah.
Whether it's Maxine Waters doing this garbage or Nancy Pelosi speaking to the bought and paid for special interest group Families USA, who are fighting against the repeal of the disastrous Obamacare mandate. You know, Pelosi basically had a breakdown, and you could tell that, you know, it's getting to her. She was repeating herself. She was basically begging people to clap for lines that really weren't all that great. And it's funny enough, considering the fact that John Kasich seems to be the mouthpiece for the Democrats, it's funny that Nancy Pelosi would basically reference John Kasich in support of defending Obamacare.
Yep, there you go.
She called him the governor of Illinois.
Yes, I heard about this, the governor of Illinois. Yeah.
In her speech, she referenced the governor of Illinois, John Kasich, which is hilarious because, you know, frankly, I kind of wish he was the governor of Illinois, because that would make his budgets more sense. But she says, don't take it from me. Take it from John Kasich, the governor of Illinois, said, thank God for Medicaid. Yeah, Kasich saying thank God for Medicaid because he basically cobbed together his budget, which he's grown spending in every year since he's been there, around the government providing the funds for the Medicaid expansion,
right,
so that he could take funds out in order to prop up things that he's done before. But now that may be going away, John Kasich's budget will have a major hole in it.
And one
pundit seems to believe, one an analyst who's an economist seems to believe, that hole by fiscal year 19, which we're going to be coming into here next year, maybe as much as $9 billion,
Chuck. Which is bigger than the $7 billion that it was when he took over.
Exactly. Now, which supposedly they filled and now have a surplus, but if
they don't, yeah.
Yeah, but they don't. But, you know, but if it does go away, then John Kasich probably is looking at the end of his political career.
Well, with that being said, we're out of time, and You now know what we think, and we want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.